This is The Guardian.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
In the middle of a mossy wood in Cambridgeshire, you're likely to find a man who knows a lot about a certain type of bird.
He is Europe's leading expert on marsh tits. There's one other man in Sweden who possibly loves marsh tits as much as Rich.
Richard Broughton, who works at the UK's Centre for Ecology and Hydrology, spends his time twice a year in Monk's Wood, strolling through the gnarled roots and trees, watching the lives and goings-on of the marsh tits.
It's a very untechie setup. He literally walks through the wood with a Nokia brick phone, and he plays alarm calls from a marsh tit that was alive 20 years ago on the Nokia.
Here he comes, he's coming now. He's going to come through, he's probably going to come through this way.
It was very nosy neighbour vibes. Like, Rich knows everything about these birds, their life histories, their partners, who they don't get on with, whether they're shy or outgoing.
But Richard is doing much more than getting the latest marsh tit gossip. He's charting the population of this species as the wood, which was once buzzing with their song, falls quiet. So why are the numbers of marsh tits and other woodland birds dwindling? And what can the study of environmental sounds, a science called biophony, tell us about the changes in the ecologies around us? From The Guardian, I'm Madeleine Finlay. And this is Science Weekly. Phoebe Weston, you're a biodiversity reporter at The Guardian, and you went to Monk's Wood in Cambridgeshire to speak to Richard Broughton and find out how sound is telling him a story about what's happening with the population of marsh tits there. So first off, tell me a bit about this bird.
So they're quite small songbirds. They're not really showy little birds, but they've got this wonderful black cap that goes over their eyes and then these little kind of tiny black moustaches under their beak. They look like little kind of bandits darting around the woods, and they really defend their territories very strongly even when they see a human come along.
They sound like real characters. But Phoebe, as Richard has been studying what's been happening to these marsh tits, he's got to know one in particular really well, who he managed to introduce you to.
Yes. So this is a bird who's nearly 9 years old, which makes him one of the oldest marsh tits on record in the UK alive at the moment. And he gets a new girlfriend every year, apparently. So he has them all for 1 year. And Rich was telling me about this old guy. He said his current girlfriend is the equivalent of like 19 years old. And so I kind of nicknamed him the Hugh Hefner bird. And Rich played on his phone the sound of an alarm call. And as I say, because they're really territorial, these birds, they hear the alarm call of another marsh tit. They think something's come onto its territory. And they're right there shouting back at you, basically, get off my land.
Oh, I can see him. He's replying.
He's replying.
Yeah, he's, yeah, it's called counter singing. So if listening, he's doing that bout of singing and then he's leaving a pause to listen. Hey, there he is.
The bird remembers Rich now, so lots of the younger birds spend a lot of time kind of realising that Rich isn't a marsh tit, but he says that Hefner's got quite wise to him now, so he kind of comes, has a look, shouts at him, and then goes off to do something else.
So Hefner, the bird, might be doing very well, but he is an outlier for the marsh tits in this area. Richard, who you were with, has been carefully monitoring the population over the past few decades. What's been happening?
Within this wood, when the research started 22 years ago, there were 22 pairs in the wood. And then last year was a really bad year. There were fewer than 10 pairs. And actually, Rich said, I'm kind of dreading going there to see what the numbers are this year, because on the one hand, it's a huge pleasure for him spending so long in the wood, but there's this very dark story happening here and he is recording it. This is just a microcosm of one, what's happening to the marsh tit population in the UK generally. So the breeding population has declined by 80% in the last 55 years, which is, I mean, just a huge decline. But more generally, woodland birds are also declining. So the abundance of woodland birds has declined by an average of 37% since 1970, and worryingly seems to have kind of accelerated in the last 5 years.
Why are these populations declining so rapidly?
Generally, woodland birds are declining because of habitat loss, the loss of quality of woodland habitats. Climate change means that they're out of sync with their food source. There's also fewer insects around, but there's two specific things really impacting marsh tits. And one of them I find quite surprising, which is feeding of blue tits and great tits in people's gardens. Blue tits and great tits go to people's gardens to feed off feeders, and marsh tits don't. Like, they really never leave the woodland. They're real specialists. They stay in this tiny area for their whole lives, and they know it so well. When you feed blue tits and great tits, you increase their population. And so they then outcompete the marsh tits in the woodland. So that's one thing. The other thing is that this woodland is a really isolated habitat. So birds are mating with other birds which are very closely related to them, which makes them a less healthy population.
As the countryside has made way for more and more farmland, we've lost more and more of our hedgerows, the lines of shrubs which delineate different areas. And this is one of the major causes of the isolation of these birds, as they can't move between different places and are much less likely to meet different populations. This is Richard.
So we know that some of these hedges have been lost and degraded. It won't happen overnight, but it's almost like being squeezed in a vise. You've got like a negative feedback. You've got fewer hedges, so fewer birds moving in. So there's fewer pairs producing fewer young, which means fewer birds to move around between the hedges. Mm. So it's almost like a negative feedback loop, which can, you know, it's good years, they might overcome it, but in bad years, they just get squeezed. You know, the bad years get worse and the good years never get as good as they used to be.
Yeah. Rich reckons in about 2040 or so, there'll be no marsh tits left in this woodland, or maybe like one pair. So it really is the story of a local extinction. And I mean, Rich kind of can't bear the idea of going out into this wood and hearing no marsh tits. He likens it to walking down a high street and all your favourite shops are boarded up, the pub is closed, and there's just this really heavy sadness.
So this corner used to be just like full of life. And yeah, now it's really quiet. And there might be one pair of marsh tits here, but whereas before, you know, it's just, you'd hear them all responding and then they'd all come in. Can start shouting at each other, saying, I'm still alive, you know. But now they're not.
Phoebe, this loss of sound in the wood, the loss of the marsh tit calls and the birdsong more generally, reveals a bigger picture about what's happening to the ecosystem there. And this leads us on to a field known as soundscape conservation. How does that work?
Yeah, so if you think about normal conservation, we think about looking for animals, and we're quite a visual culture, I guess. So we're on the lookout for stuff. But actually, people realize that animals use sounds to find mates, to protect their territory, like the marsh tits, like endless communication that goes on all the time. And so in a way, by tapping into sound, conservationists are learning more about habitats than we knew before, because these animals, they're telling you about what they're doing. They're telling you where they are and what species they are. So they're giving us a huge amount of information. And the whole sound of the ecosystem, which is called the biophony, it's all of these animals making a sound at the same time, can tell us about the health of the entire ecosystem. So the absolute pioneer of soundscape ecology is a guy called Bernie Krause. And he was the guy that pioneered the word biophony, this idea that ecosystems can produce a kind of orchestra of sound that tells us about them. Like, they're incredibly complex, these soundscapes. So Bernie's really been leading the charge on this, and has the most incredible archive of sound recordings from all over the world.
And what I find fascinating is that by taking recordings over time, you can begin to figure out, I guess, like Richard has been doing in Monk's Wood, exactly what's changing. And this has been something that Bernie has also been doing for a long time. He must have lots of examples of this.
Bernie's been all over the world, but I think one of the most haunting stories he's recorded comes from just 20 minutes drive from where he lives, just north of San Francisco, in a place called Sugarloaf Ridge State Park. And essentially, Bernie started recording this park in 1993. And he said he has ADHD. He went out there and he was recording the sounds to calm him down. And he started recording from a single place on the bend of a river by this tree, which is called the Grandmother Oak. Locals say it's 500 years old. So it's a really old oak tree. And every year in April, so in spring, he would go out to that bend in the river and record what he could hear. Bernie didn't realize that there was a story in his recordings until he listened back to them, probably like 10 years later or something, but it was years afterwards. There was this really haunting story coming through his audio files, and that was of an ecosystem turning silent. The first recording is the park in 1993, and you'll hear it's absolutely bustling, full of sound. And lots of the sounds we're hearing in this recording would have been totally normal for that period in the 90s. And now in 2000, and this one's from 2010. And finally, this is 2023.
Hearing that, Phoebe, I mean, personally, I just find it scary and upsetting. And I guess when it comes to science, sound, as you said, isn't always a sense that we pay attention to very much, but it does tell us an awful lot, doesn't it? I mean, listening to that, it's far more powerful than a statistic or looking at a graph.
Totally agree with you, Maddie. When you hear that sound, and I remember the first time I heard that succession of sounds, I felt it in my heart. Like, it's not an intellectual thing. You're like, oh my God. And this is what Bernie's now trying to do with his recordings, is to say something that speaks louder than science. Because we read so often about declines, it becomes quite cerebral, kind of looking at these numbers and thinking, God, that's a big number. Like 80% decline in marsh tits is a big number. That doesn't sound good. But when you hear what's happening, it really sits with you. And Bernie now is trying to create works of art out of these sounds, because he says, you need to listen to what these ecosystems are telling us. They're telling us a really powerful thing, and they're saying it better than any of us can with our words.
Most of us live in a very noisy world, but it's a world filled with human produced sounds, cars, traffic, you know, the hustle and bustle. And so when we do go into natural environments, we might think to ourselves, you know, ah, bird song, the rustling of leaves. But perhaps if we listened more often and more intently, we might notice something different. What did you take away from spending time with Richard in that wood? And the fact that this is something that he's now experiencing himself, this loss and this extinction through sound.
What I really learned from being in the woodland with Rich is that, to me, this was the most beautiful wood and it looks really healthy. So what I find surprising about Rich's work is that it's not just in habitats that are destroyed. It's not like if you chop down a woodland and turn it into farmland, then you're going to lose all the birds. It's happening in habitats that should be really healthy. And the fact that it's already been emptied out of all of those birds and now the marsh tits are going, it's like there's some bigger power moving through our landscapes that even in really healthy habitats cannot stand up to this, like, this huge force. I think it points to something really profound happening to our planet that is touching even very healthy ecosystems. And it's happening really quickly as well. These birds are emptying out of the wood in, like, you know, in the past few decades, a handful of woodland species have disappeared. And undoubtedly, marsh tits will be next. And in a sense, Rich said, there feels like there's nothing I can do about it. Like, no local conservation in the wood is going to stop what's happening to the marsh tits.
My thanks to Phoebe Weston. You can read her piece about visiting Richard and the Monkswood marsh tits on theguardian.com. And there you can also find the full Soundscape series, looking at how the natural world is falling silent as a result of human activity. This episode was produced by me, Madeline Finley, and Josh Anchana. It was sound designed by Joel Cox. And the executive producer is Ellie Bury. We'll be back on Thursday. See you then.
This is The Guardian.